from deep inside your radio.
Take me in.
God, it's really a shame to get the Jingle Singers up and arranged and it'd be the wrong time. That is so sad. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I agree with President Bush. You want to write this down? Because this is kind of historical. I agree with our leader. I'm kind of like Joe Crummy in Phoenix. I agree with the president. The president this morning came out to talk to reporters about two impending disasters, Hurricane Katrina and the Iraqi Constitution. And the president said, with more precision than usual in defending the war, that democracies don't attack their neighbors. This is in defense of our democratize Iraq. Democracies do not attack their neighbors. And that is, of course, correct. I agree with the president. Democracies attack countries halfway around the world. Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you. never seen a quaint old southern city. Just think of New, think of New Orleans. If you've never seen that town, boy, it's a pity. There's nothing like New Orleans. It will remind you of old-fashioned lace. A glass of wine will greet your smiling face. And if you ever see a black-eyed gal like mine, boy, oh, then you're right in it. Right in New Orleans.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? Please do. Please miss it. Hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. The Coast Guard knows. I don't believe anything until the Coast Guard tells me, because I evacuated once from New Orleans. When everybody said Hurricane Georges was on track to make a direct hit, and a guy said, no, I talked to a guy from the Coast Guard, it's going to Mississippi. They evacuated. We evacuated. Mandatory evacuation. 36 hours later, hurricane goes to Mississippi. So I'm waiting for the Coast Guard, but ladies and gentlemen, in the meantime, let's get scared.
Let's get scared. Let's get scared.
Pressure is mounting on the British government to act more decisively on the threatened bird flu pandemic that could kill 100 million people around the world. We hear a lot about this, don't we? I'm sure our government is doing plenty. As the World Health Organization warned that humanity was watching the evolution of a possible pandemic, Britain's leading expert on virology has called on the British poultry industry to follow the lead of other European countries, including the Dutch, and keep their birds indoors to head off the spread of the deadly H5N1 virus from Asia to the doorsteps of Europe. So far, the British Department of Environment and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, has insisted there is no urgent need to move British poultry indoors, and that the risk of the virus infecting humans in Europe is remote. But in today's Glasgow Sunday Herald, John Oxford, virology professor at the Institute of Cell and Molecular Science in London, accuses the department of sitting on its hands when faced with a possible catastrophe. We should not be wringing our hands in a year's time and wishing we'd done something, he writes. The German government will be moving its poultry indoors as well. Under a secret planning scenario seen by the Glasgow Sunday Herald, the British government estimates an outbreak of avian flu in the human population could kill up to 600,000 people in Britain. The leaked documents show the government is well aware of the dire public health and public order threat from bird flu and paint a chilling picture of the breakdown of civil society in a Britain besieged by the bird flu virus. Gee, I'm sure we're fine. That's why we don't hear anything about it here. Quote, a minimum of 25% of the population will become ill over each 6 to 8 week period, with additional people affected due to those caring for the sick and the worried well, the planning papers reveal. Some 10 to 35% of the workforce will be absent from work. Of course, some of us would ask, it's Britain, how could you tell? No, just kidding. Influenza will spread rapidly in schools. Up to 50% of school children may develop influenza. British vets have stepped up surveillance of poultry and wild birds. But according to the department, the risk remains low. And I'm sure here it's non-existent. That's why we're not hearing anything about it. Bird flu, ladies and gentlemen. Forget about it. I didn't say it. I didn't say anything. Let's get scared about this. Dan Dillon landed a bluefin tuna in July that was a Delaware record breaker, 873 pounds. It was also a record breaker in another way. Mercury levels in the fish were 2.5 times higher than the action level the Food and Drug Administration sets for commercial fish. That's the level where the FDA will take action to remove the fish from the market. The mercury was also nearly twice the highest level of mercury ever found by the FDA in fresh or frozen tuna steaks. This is according to the Oceana campaign. Dillon donated a 5-pound frozen fillet from his tuna to the campaign for testing. A spokesperson for the Oceana campaign said the mercury finding should serve as a wake-up call. Me, I think coffee should serve as a wake-up call. That's what it's designed for. All right, so we're scared. Now let's get ticked off. We're constantly being told, ladies and gentlemen, this is the best place in the world to live. Aren't we? Isn't that the line? You disagree with that, you're un-American. This is the best place in the world to live. Everybody knows that. That's why they're in line to get in. That's what we always hear. Well, guess who's raining on that particular parade? We'll get sick John Bolton on these people. Norway tops a 2005 United Nations ranking as the best country to live in for the fifth year in a row, according to the head of the UN Development Program. Oh, man, wait till Bolton gets his teeth into that guy's trousers. Rich from North Sea oil and with a generous welfare state, Norway has led the world ranking since ousting Canada in 2001. The annual list ranks countries by an index combining wealth, education, and life expectancy. Oh, well, sure, if they put education in the list, who needs that? We got TV. The 2000 report ranks Norway number one on the Human Development Index, according to United Nations Development Program Administrator Kemal Dervis. Get him. Sick him, John. He gave no other details of the ranking. Last year, Norway was followed by Sweden, Australia, yeah, and Canada at the top. Sierra Leone was the last of 177 countries listed. Where would the United States be on this list? You might ask. No way of knowing, ladies and gentlemen, it's not in the story from the Reuters news service. Norwegians generally reckon their economic upturn is fueled by high oil prices. A fund saving Norway's oil wealth for future generations is now worth $180 billion, or $39,000 for each citizen. What a nutty place. They save their money for the future. Man, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now, don't you know, for news from outside the bubble. Oh, it sure is. I don't care what anybody says. And of course, nobody said nothing. That was the problem. Pakistan's president, General Perv Musharraf, confirmed this week for the first time that devilish old Pakistani nuclear scientist AQ Khan provided North Korea with centrifuge machines that could be used to make fuel for an atomic bomb. It's from a Japanese news agency. In an interview in Islamabad, no, I'm not saying Islam is bad. That's the name of the city. In an interview with the agency Kyoto News, General Perv Musharraf said, Dr. A.Q. Khan had sent centrifuges, parts and complete, to North Korea. He didn't divulge the number of centrifuges that arrived in North Korea, saying, quote, I do not exactly remember the number, unquote. Meaning he knew the number, but it's such an insignificant fact that he forgot it. General Musharraf also said Dr. Khan might have sent, North Korea might have sent them uranium hexafluoride, which can be enriched in centrifuges. Well, that would be the whole system then. And then processed into fuel for civilian nuclear reactors or atomic bombs. General Musharraf reiterated his long-held position that he and other members of Pakistan's powerful military hadn't been powerful enough to know that Dr. Khan was shipping nuclear hardware all over the world. The general's comments were Pakistan's first official acknowledgement of nuclear technologies to North Korea. Dr. Khan, who is under virtual house arrest in Islamabad, I guess that means his computer can't leave the house? What does that mean? Is believed to have run the largest nuclear smuggling ring in history. Well, there haven't been nuclear stuff for very long. That's a stupid claim. Dr. Khan's part is only enriching the I think it would be absolutely shocking that Dr. Khan's part is only enriching the uranium to weapons grade, General Musharraf said. He does not know about making the bomb. He does not know about the trigger mechanism. He does not know about the delivery system. That's General Musharraf's comment, but investigators who dismantled Libya's nuclear program, also provided by the Khan Network, found blueprints of a nearly complete Chinese design for a nuclear weapon, apparently obtained by Dr. Khan. It's unclear whether North Korea received the same design. General Perv Musharraf also minimized the significance of the possibility that Dr. Khan may have shipped uranium hexafluoride to North Korea. He said North Korea would need to pass tons and tons of the material through thousands of centrifuges to produce weapons-grade uranium. General Musharraf also denied long-standing allegations that his government traded nuclear technology for North Korean long-range missile technology in the 1990s. He said his country was sharing whatever Dr. Khan has told us with Japan and Western countries, supposedly including the United States. But American officials say they fear Pakistani officials are providing foreign governments with only partial descriptions of Dr. Khan's statements and activities. Those are our friends, ladies and gentlemen, the Pakistanis, providing us only partial, you see, because I have more news about our friends Pakistan from the New York Daily News. Pakistan's inability, in many cases outright refusal, to try to stop jihadists from infiltrating into Afghanistan from Pakistan is infuriating soldiers, American soldiers, on the frontier of the two countries. The commander of all U.S. forces in Afghanistan, Army Major General Jason Kamiya, says he's unaware of his troops' complaints about ineffective Pakistani border police, who sometimes appear complicit with al-Qaeda. I've not heard that, no, sir, said Kamiya, who was questioned by the New York Daily News during a border visit last week. I don't know much about the Pakistani border police. That's what the commander of all U.S. forces in Afghanistan says. I don't know much about the Pakistani border police. Those would be the police who keep al-Qaeda from infiltrating into Afghanistan, if they did their job. So you wouldn't want to know about that if you're head of all American troops in Afghanistan, would you? U.S. military and intelligence sources throughout the border area complained that Kamiya's staff, Major General Kamiya, who took charge last spring, have hamstrung them with layers of red tape requiring command-level permission to operate near the border or cross it in pursuit of al-Qaeda members. Said one U.S. commander, that border is the bane of my existence. If anything, we feel more restricted than we did 3 months ago. The Wild West out here, says a source involved in counterterrorism missions, the border is completely untamed. The border is a tricky political problem for Pakistani President Perv Musharraf, who must balance fighting terrorism against his own country's growing hostility toward America. Even a simple U.S. foot patrol along the border must be approved by higher-ups, who sometimes bar officers from leading their men, sources said. It's a delicate political dance being done by President Pervez Musharraf. Other news from outside the bubble. Downing Street was warned more than a year before the London bombings that the Iraq War was exacerbating a sense of anger and impotence among British Muslims. I know, this is this Iraq War caused terrorism. I hear Christopher Hitchens inveighing against that all the time. He says it's so stupid. And this is just coming from the British Foreign Office. A letter written in May 2004 by the permanent secretary to the former Foreign Office, Sir Michael Jay, and leaked to the British newspaper The Observer, warns that the task of engaging with Muslims in Britain had been knocked back by the war in Iraq. He wrote, quote, "Colleagues have flagged up some of the potential underlying causes of extremism that can affect the Muslim community, such as discrimination, disadvantage, and exclusion. But another recurring theme is the issue of British foreign policy, especially in the context of the Middle East peace process and Iraq. British foreign policy and the perception of its negative effect on Muslims globally plays a significant role in creating a feeling of anger and impotence, especially among the younger generation of British Muslims," unquote. It went on to warn that this resentment was a key driver behind recruitment by fundamentalist groups, unquote. At Striped Pants Bunch, ladies and gentlemen, let's move over, let's change our focus for a moment. Iran. Iran is poised to notch an important victory in its dispute with the West over its nuclear program after UN experts found that traces of highly enriched uranium collected in the country were probably not of Iranian origination. That UN again. Will you bite their trouser legs, John? The traces found 2 years ago set alarm bells ringing in the West and at the International Atomic Energy Agency, fueling fears that Tehran was manufacturing material for bombs. IAEA testing has largely vindicated the Iranians, who argued all along that the particles were imported on equipment obtained, here's that name again, from a Pakistan-based nuclear smuggling racket. Pakistani officials were at the agency in Vienna this week to discuss the findings in what sources described as an exceptional meeting. Back to Iraq. America. 3 weeks of patrols and interviews in restive Anbar province suggest that Iraqi security forces will need years of preparation before they're ready to take charge of the complex and violent tribal areas of western Iraq. This is from Knight Ridder newspapers. Years to train them. And she was the Iraqi activist who became a symbol of the possibility for a brighter future for Iraq. In February, with blue ink, it would actually be purple ink, Independent gets the color wrong, British newspaper, The Independent, with blue ink on her finger symbolizing the recent Iraqi election in which she had just voted, Safia Talib al-Suhail was invited to sit with Laura Bush and listen to the president claim in his State of the Union address that success was being achieved in Iraq. Her picture went around the world after she turned to hug Janet Norwood, a Texas woman whose son had been killed in Iraq. But now it appears Ms. Suhail, an anti-Saddam activist who became Iraq's ambassador to Egypt, may be having second thoughts. Having seen the negotiation for the country's constitution fall into disarray and the prospect of a secular constitution severely undermined, she now expresses these concerns. Quote, "When we came back from exile, we thought we were going to improve rights and the position of women. But look what has happened. We have lost all the gains we made over the last 30 years. It's a big disappointment. Human rights should not be linked to Islamic Sharia law at all." Unquote. Ladies and gentlemen, now we move on because we must. It is time for me to read the trades for you, unless you want to read them for me. I don't know. You have the facilities? You have the transmitter? I didn't think so. From TVtechnology.com, a town named Dish. Read it for him. It may sound too good to be true, but any town in the United States willing to change its name legally and permanently to Dish will get 10 years of free satellite programming, courtesy of EchoStar, owners of Dish TV. Dish is introducing the Dish City Makeover for every household in a participating city or town to receive a complete satellite TV program system, including free TV programming. To get in on the free action, the town's government must be convinced by eager townsfolk to change government buildings, post offices, official letterhead, schools and hospitals, if applicable, street signs, and over government signage with the city or town's name. The municipality must also file all necessary state and federal paperwork. When a TVTechnology.com editor asked about this opportunity for her community, an EchoStar rep said they'd help organize a committee to change the town's name. We will attend city council meetings, set up meetings, petitions, you name it. We would love for you to live in Dish, Virginia, he said. For a town of 1,000 people, this deal adds up to about $4 million in programming, gear, and installation. Maybe Truth or Consequences New Mexico would like to make the same mistake again. And, though it's not from the trades, it's about the advertising trade. Fully clothed, they're a group of ordinary young women whom you might say on their way to, see on their way to work or play in any American city, stripped down to their underwear and magnified on huge advertising boards. They are the Amazonian symbols of an ever-widening gulf between Madison Avenue's traditional fantasy of the female form and the way most women actually look. The Dove Skin Care Company's Campaign for Real Beauty, featuring real women, launched in Britain last year, has now launched in the United States to a decidedly mixed reception. Dove's attempt to sell affirming cream uses amateur models whose bulges and curves are never seen in glossy fashion magazines. For many Americans, the sight of so much flesh has proved an unwelcome shock to the system. Dove has been forced to replace dozens of posters after they were defaced by graffiti artists. Quote, fat cows, unquote, was among the few printable observations. Dubbed reality advertising by the advertising industry. Advertising industry has come up with the name reality advertising for this particular form of advertising, ladies and gentlemen. Just wanted to point that out. What does that tell you about the rest of advertising, ladies and gentlemen? The campaign has also provoked hostile media reaction. Quote, the only time I want to see a thigh that big is in a bucket with breadcrumbs on it, grumbled one columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Film critic Richard Roper says, when we're talking about women in their underwear on billboards outside my living room windows, give me the fantasy babes, please. If that makes me sound superficial, shallow, and sexist, well, yes, I'm a man, unquote. See, that's why you should have gay men doing film reviews. The campaign has also provoked complaints that using overweight women as advertising role models could set the wrong examples. Last week, a report showed that more Americans are getting fatter more quickly. I did it because I saw it on a billboard. Much of the campaign's shock value stems from the fact that most Americans have rarely seen ordinary women portrayed as attractive on television dramas or in Hollywood. However, the advertising industry is gambling that the time is right for a reality check. It coincides with a blitz by Nike, which has been dubbed the Big Butt Campaign, featuring an oversized woman's bottom clad in a pair of tight shorts. One advertisement says, quote, my butt is big, but that's just fine because those who scorn it are invited to kiss it, unquote. Nike says the ads are a celebration of women and what is real. Like Dove, Nike says its message is one of empowerment. Reality, ladies and gentlemen, it can be rough. It can be rough to deal with, this whole reality thing. It can be rough. Proof, more proof if any was needed, ABC's pulled the plug on a new reality show just weeks before it goes on the air. Welcome to the Neighborhood focused on several white families in Texas who were selecting a neighbor to live in a house in their cul-de-sac. They were choosing from families of diverse backgrounds, including African-Americans, Hispanic, Asian, and gay families. Fair housing and civil rights groups that previewed the episode said the show was offensive and violated housing laws. ABC has taken the show off the air. More about reality television and reality moments from now here on the show.
My friends, you're hearing so many mattress commercials on radio these days precisely because the old-fashioned mattress is dead and gone. It is time, my friends, to see what's new, and the new Sleep Warm system from Comfortronics takes the sleeping on air concept to a whole new level, literally. Because up to now, the air-filled mattress has depended on factory air, but because of the well-known principle that air expands or contracts depending on temperature, your mattress is never at a consistent level of comfort. comfort throughout the day and the year, unless you've got the Sleep Warm system. Imagine taking waste heat from your water heater, your attic, your furnace, your gas range after you turn it off, and keeping a precision-built sleeping surface always inflated with consistently heated air. Now, imagine getting a patent for it and buying saturation radio commercials, and you've got the Sleep Warm system from Comfortronics. But don't take my word for it, my friends. Do what I did. Take the 30-night free Sleep on Hot Air test for yourself. If you don't agree that people who care sleep on hot air, then by all means send back the system and go sleep on some enviro-wacko bunch of springs and straw. But by all means keep the free Sleep Warm mug as our gift to you. Now, folks, don't spend another night wishing you'd made this call. 1-800-BEST-BED or sleepwarm.com. Get the free video, the mug, and the 30-night trial. You'll see it's so good it's unfair when you sleep on hot air.
Another one way, I'll make my bed where a feather falls. I start to move when forever calls.
Home trip,
ticket to sail away, Hitchcock Railway,
Sunrise,
made the comfort,
then try,
guaranteed passport, Hitchcock Railway.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, of course, you know about this one. Conservative U.S. evangelist Pat Robertson apologized for calling for the assassination of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, saying he spoke in frustration. A very Christian emotion earlier in the week. Is it right to call for assassination? No, and I apologize for that statement. I spoke in frustration that we should accommodate the man who thinks the U.S. is out to kill him. Unquote. This is after denying that he said it, by the way. Robertson said on Monday of Chavez's fears of being killed by the United States. If he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I really think we really ought to go ahead and do it. But then he denied he said it until people said, it's on tape, it's on the internet. And he apologized. Okay? Terrorism expert John Loftus regularly appears on the Fox News channel. But not lately. His absences began after he gave out the purported address of an alleged terrorist living in California. The man whom Loftus identified by name during the broadcast moved out of the house about 3 years ago. The new residents are left to clean up the word terrorist, which was spray-painted on their property. A Fox News spokesperson says, quote, John Loftus has been reprimanded for his careless error, and we sincerely apologize to the family. Victims of Eric Rudolph's bombs confronted him in court this week, describing him as a small man who cowardly lied amid his carnage. A judge sentenced him to life in prison. Just before his sentence was handed down, Rudolph apologized to the victims of the 1996 Atlanta Olympic bombing, saying, quote, I would do anything to take that night back, unquote. He said he had wanted to anger and embarrass the federal government because it does not prohibit abortions, and that he only wanted to harm government workers. That he wanted to harm only government workers. A judge sentenced HealthSouth Corporation's first finance chief to 3 months in prison for his role in a $2.7 billion earnings overstatement at the rehab and medical services chain. Aaron Beam, who helped Richard Scrushy found the company in a one-room office in 1984 and testified against the ousted chief executive officer earlier this year at his fraud trial, will also forfeit $275,000. Sobbing as he stood before the judge, Beam apologized and said he went along with the fraud out of fear of Scrushy. Quote, I should have stood up to Richard Scrushy and said no, but I didn't, unquote. That's a good excuse.
I was afraid of the guy with the thing.
Colorado police are investigating a woman's complaint about how she was ordered to stop nursing her baby, thrown against her family car with her blouse still open, and taken away to jail in handcuffs and what turned out to be a case of mistaken identity. I'm in shock, said the woman's husband, Ricky Archuleta, describing the incident. The baby's screaming, the kids start crying and screaming, and I don't know what to do. I actually don't know what I said. I said something, and the state trooper just yelled in the car and said, you need to be silent. The June 12th arrest stemmed from a case of mistaken identity. By police charges against Mercedes Archuleta have been dropped. The mother wound up spending a night in jail. Major Jim Wolfenbarger of the Colorado State Patrol said the agency is investigating. The police department has admitted its mistake and offered to meet with the family to apologize personally. Mrs. Archuleta has declined. She said she's embarrassed and humiliated. Oh, accept the apology, lady. What the hell's wrong with you? The president of a Los Angeles City Commission called for one of Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa's nominees to be rejected because he wrote an email that mocks Italian-Americans and makes fun of contributors to a city council candidate. Michael Gatto said in a letter to Councilman Tom Labong that nominee Tony Scudellari was not fit to serve because of the group email Scudellari sent earlier in the day. Scudellari apologized this week. I apologize for what I said. I didn't mean for it to come out the way that it did, he said in a telephone interview. Some of the jokes were in jokes that were among friends. It wasn't meant for public consumption. I was trying to make light of the fact we're both Italian, he said. You know how Italians joke? A Alabama state senator apologized after a police incident report showed his pre-dawn visit to the state capitol with an unidentified woman caused the building to be shut down for security reasons. Senator Kurt Lee issued a written apology which described the incident as a lark. The Southern Illinois University campus newspaper apologized this week for getting caught up in an elaborate hoax about a soldier and his daughter. We blew it, the Daily Egyptian said. There's no pleasant way to put it. We didn't check the facts carefully. We believed what we were told without verifying. We weren't as skeptical as we're supposed to be. We were fooled by a little girl with a cute smile, surrounded by a group of adults who acted the hoax with her. Unquote. Well, they're learning to be real journalists, not checking. Singer Justin Timberlake accepted an apology and damages from a British tabloid newspaper that falsely accused him of cheating on girlfriend Cameron Diaz. Enough about that. The new New Hampshire Attorney General is investigating a Rochester, New Hampshire doctor because a patient complained he bluntly told her she needed to lose weight. Dr. Terry Bennett said he's outraged by what he calls a baseless complaint. A patient was apparently insulted when Bennett told her she was obese. Bennett said it's a lecture he gives to many of his overweight patients. The attorney general's office tried to get him to settle a matter by agreeing to a medical education course, which he refused. I'm sorry. She's watching. I'm devoutly sorry to have offended you, he said on New Hampshire television. I didn't mean to offend you. I meant to tell you the truth. So she's not only a fatso, she's an angry fatso. I'm sorry. And country music's redneck woman, two more, promises to keep her can of skull in her back pocket from now on. Tennessee's attorney general had asked Gretchen Wilson not to pull out a can of skull smokeless tobacco during performances of her new song, Skull Ring, because it glamorizes tobacco use. A warning letter said the routine might violate the 1998 tobacco settlement. Wilson agreed not to. But she didn't really apologize, so how did that get in here? And officials at J.P. Morgan Chase have apologized and promised to improve their screening policies after a credit card solicitation letter sent to a 55-year-old naturalized American citizen came addressed to, quote, Palestinian bomber. Dear Palestinian bomber, the salutation reads. Yeah, I'd apologize for that. I don't care. I don't care who says what. Apologies the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, in Crawford, Texas, the battle lines are drawn. The Cindy Sheehan supporters opposing the continuation of the Iraq War have now been joined by a group of mothers, some who lost sons in Iraq as well, who are supporting the war. They're having competing demonstrations, despite the fact that we all know that's not the way these disputes get settled in America these days.
It's the end of August, but reality TV is just starting to sizzle. Every week from now on until you just can't take it anymore, a new kind of competition. And the stakes just couldn't be higher if we met it. Two women, Cindy.
My son died for no good reason. So for me, this is just another battle to win for Casey.
And Deb.
Best way I know to support the troops is to win this competition the way the Lord wants me to.
Battle of the Military Moms. It's more than a game, and it's only a game. And the playing field is the whole wide world.
I'm Carson Ryan Carr, your host for Battle of the Military Moms. Right now we're choppering Deb and Cindy into a little competition we call Urban Warfare.
Yeah, I'm scared. I've never run a barber shop in my life, and I hear it's against their religion to get shaved, so I just gotta be strong.
It could be in Baghdad or at the Paramount Movie Ranch, but I'm the only one who knows, aside from our 50-person crew, and I'm not talking anymore.
I don't think they'd let us die because, you know, it's television. On the other hand, I did sign that waiver, so I just gotta be strong.
Two grieving but determined mothers. Two grueling months. Plus six challenging weeks with life coach Wayne Pitzer in the military mom's house.
You do the dishes.
I did the dishes.
Cindy, am I the only one here who thinks this isn't about the dishes?
And then, the unbelievable finale. The moms face their darkest fears and their fondest hopes, guided by famed psychic John Stephen.
One of these two spirits is going to talk to us tonight, and the mother who makes contact with her son through me is going to walk out of this tent $1 million richer. So that is one sweet spirit.
Just to remind you, I'm Carson Ryan Carr from VH1's Schmuck Bait. This is the mother of all reality shows, and it's realer than a body bag. Dude, that's real.
We're not pushing the envelope. We're tearing it up. It's only a game, but it's more than just a game. Battle of the Military Moms, Fox Tuesdays this season. Unless you hate it, this year, go fox yourself.
Thank you. makes her dizzy twice as long, like an endless summer haze. We were wandering, hearts without a home, searching for a place. Ooh, roaming, going on without a plan, yeah. Never looking back, aimlessly, aimlessly. Devoted to the moon.
Folks, when it comes to mattress commercials, you've just entered the no-spin zone. O'Reilly here to talk about one good thing we've gotten out of the whole NASA situation, the Superpedic bed. Now, it was developed for the astronauts, never used because of a bureaucratic snafu. Now it's available to all Factor listeners. What makes a Superpedic bed so darn comfortable? Maybe you've slept on a waterbed in the past, so you know that liquid makes a great sleeping surface. Only problem is water is the wrong liquid. They don't have that much water in space anyway. But a denser liquid gives you firmer support, okay? And everyone knows there's almost no denser liquid than soup. That's why the Superpedic bed uses literal space-age technology, proof for more than 35 years, to fill its sleep surface with hydrologically activated instant soup. Of course, the system is triple-sealed, so there's no odor, no mess of any kind, just the kind of sleep you dreamed about if you hadn't been awake. You gotta experience the Superpedic bed for yourself, and there's only two places you can do that, at the Superpedic store and then in your own home. You know I'm looking out for you, so don't let me down. Find your nearest Superpedic bed store by going online at supersleep.com. Remember what we say here on The Factor. Get in the loop. Start sleeping on soup.
Ladies and gentlemen, just one Los Angeles dog trainer correction for you this week, because this is the show business capital of the world, and that's the paper of record for this community, isn't it? A column on Wednesday, an item said, HBO's Six Feet Under won the Emmy for Best Drama Series in 2003. In fact, The West Wing won that award. Six Feet Under has never won an Emmy in that category. Los Angeles dog trainer correction for you. And with that, we close the book on this week's edition of the show. And there is no book. The program returns next week at the same time as a radio show over these same stations. Why would there be a book? Over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast, via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world, through the facilities of... I'd said that already. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived, available as a free download at audible.com/LaShow, and available on channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a podcast for free at kcrw.com. Hurry, there's no hurry. And it would be just like there being a hurry if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. My thanks to the Wrong Time Jingle Singers for their contribution to the broadcast today. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. LeShow Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. LeShow playlists available at harryshearer.com. for those of you who don't yet know it, you can see something scribbled by me just about every day at the Eat the Press section of www.huffingtonpost.com. Maybe not every day. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Won't you? As Mayor Ray Nagin said, y'all pray for us.